Hello and welcome to the Edinburgh University History and Games Lab podcast. In this series of episodes, we will be talking to historians, game creators, heritage professionals, and others about history, games, and the places where they meet. I'm your host, Edward Gafton, and in this episode, I'm thrilled to be joined by Eric Wood.
Hello, pleasure to be here. Thank you very much for the opportunity, Ed. It's very good of you to do this in your spare time, and I'm very excited to talk a little bit about the Last Samurai Rebellion. A little project I'm working on with the History and Games Lab.
Of course, Eric, my pleasure. Lovely to see you on. So for everyone not acquainted with Eric is a recent history and classic graduate from the University of Edinburgh, and he is a member of the History and Games Lab and is here to talk about the Last Samurai Rebellion, our first student-driven wargaming publication, and Eric's project. The project is an expansion to the popular colonial wargaming rule set, The Men Who Would Be Kings, written by game designer in residence, Dan Mercy. The Last Samurai Rebellion focuses on a pivotal moment in Japanese history that has largely been neglected by historical wargaming, namely Japan's Last Samurai Uprising, more likely known as the Satsuma Rebellion from 1877. The Last Samurai Rebellion is Eric Wood's debut game, and so we're thrilled to have you on. Eric, thank you for coming on. So we've known each other for quite a bit through the research lab, and so I want to ask you, how has being a member of the lab changed how you perceive or view wargaming?
Well, that's a very interesting question. Well, firstly, being a part of the games lab, it's made me recognise that younger people are really interested in historical wargaming. Generally speaking, historical wargaming is the common perceptions of it is, you know, like as you get older and, you know, you get a mortgage and you got your kids and family and such. Those are the sorts of people which are interested in historical wargaming. But it's great to be introduced to sort of like-minded people of a similar age group who are fascinated by historical wargaming and who do want to produce content. And what I really love about the Games Lab is it's creating a platform for young people to produce content for historical wargaming, which otherwise would be incredibly difficult to do by oneself.
Yeah, fantastic. That's a lovely answer. And I would, you know, say kind of the same things like yourself. Like for me, it's been so fun to see how many people are fascinated by history, by games, by the places where they meet. As I make it clear, like on every podcast, I'm more on the game side of things rather than the history side of things. That's why I'm happy to have historians usually come in and just, you know, kind of tell me everything about the history, which is a perfect segue into me asking you, Eric, how did the Last Samurai Rebellion start? So like, are you fascinated with the period? I know you studied history and classics, but like how do you go from studying history and classics to designing a war game based on this rebellion in Japan?
So interestingly enough, you know, I was just going about my studies, you know, looking through my emails and procrastinating while doing my dissertation, and I was on Facebook one day. I was looking through Facebook and there's a little post from the University of Edinburgh talking about, well, not talking, but a little post discussing the History and Games Lab, you know, and I'd never heard of this organization before. You know, it was a relatively new organization. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I'm saying organization too many times.
No worries.
So I looked it up. I thought, you know, it sounded really interesting, you know, history and games. Well, I love both, you know. I spent many And now when I was younger doing Total War, and I've always been very passionate about the modelling and miniatures hobby. I've been doing that for over a decade. And I've noticed that on the Games Lab website that John Luca, the founder of the Games Lab, he was posting content relating to war games because he published Crusader States, an expansion for Lion Rampart, and an additional expansion recently, Viking in the Sun. So I looked at that and I thought, you know, that sounds looks really cool and interesting, something which I'm really interested in. I thought, well, you know, I might as well drop John Luke an email saying, hey, you know, I'm really intrigued by the Games Lab. Any way I can contribute? And, you know, from there, we discussed possibilities of me perhaps writing an article about, you know, for instance, I remember at the time I was studying a module about the Spartans. You know, so that's mm-hmm. what's great about doing a history and classics degree is I can cover all the history. You know, I don't have to just focus on contemporary history or you know, a specific period of history, let's say. So I dropped him an email saying, hey, you know, And then he mentioned the possibility of writing an article, perhaps, about, you know, Spartans and warfare in relation to wargaming. Mm-hmm. And I mentioned my dissertation. And he said, well, you know, it sounds interesting. Let's gamify it, essentially.
Yeah.
And from there, that's what I've been focusing on, you know, and it's developed into this. well, that's why I am just now today, you know, gamifying my dissertation research and mm-hmm. yeah, making, well, the Last Samurai Rebellion.
Yeah, well, it's lovely. You're the first student that we have on the podcast. So I feel like we're coming from similar perspectives because I usually have more established game creators rather than someone who is just having his debut. So I'm super excited to have you on and to have you discuss everything. If you're watching the podcast rather than listening, on screen now I have some of the images that have inspired Eric or images from the figurines and from the game itself. So you're in for a treat if you are enjoying the podcast on YouTube. But in any case, Eric, I want to ask you, how would you describe The Last Samurai Rebellion to someone who's never played a war game like this? Or maybe even tabletop in general, how would you describe it to them?
Okay, so the beauty of the Men Who Would Be Kings rule set, which is what The Last Samurai Rebellion is based on, or an expansion to, is that it's an incredibly simple rule set. It's very straightforward. You can read through it in about half an hour and understand, you know, the mechanics. It's really it's a really good rule set for those who haven't done historical wargaming before and who want to get into it. It's not intimidating at all. So using the Men Who Would Be Kings rule set there, it's very simple. And that's what it's very easy to get into. So that's you know, highlights or of the Men Who Would Be Kings.
Hmm. And so beyond then the logic of the game or the rule set, what was The Last Samurai Rebellion? Again, we see the images on the screen, but like, why focus your game on this one particular event, or is it a series of events? Like, give us some context about the rebellion itself, please.
Okay. So, the reason why I chose the Satsuma Rebellion to be the topic of expansion was because of my dissertation research.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it was based on. And so, Last Samurai Rebellion. There's a fantastic little series on extra credits which discusses the fall of the samurai on mm-hmm. YouTube.
And they give extra credits.
I love it. Yeah, it's helped me now and then with for panic revision, where I watch a module of extra credits or such, and you know, it's funny enough, one exam it popped up there and it helped me out on ancient Rome. But with the actual Last Summer Rebellion, the way the events of the Last Summer Rebellion, it's more commonly known as the Satsuma Rebellion, happened mm-hmm. in 1877. Short-term factors of it. For the cause of the rebellion was samurai discontent. So ever since Matthew Perry came into Japan in 1854, the Japanese, the Meiji Restoration government began introducing policies to modernize Japan, because they were fully aware of, you know, what happened to China, for instance, with the Opium Wars, and how it essentially became a vassal to the Western powers with the unfair treaties and such. So Japan really didn't want to be in the same position as China. So they started the Meiji Restorationist government began introducing policies to modernize Japan. However, many of these policies alienated the samurai. So for mm-hmm. instance, with the introduction of universal conscription in the 1870s, to have peasant conscripts filling a role, you know, a warrior role, which the samurai dominated for centuries, was interpreted as a slap in the face for many samurai. You know, an additional policy such as the abolition of the right of samurai to wear swords was taken as a great insult. So the many samurai were incredibly frustrated by the Meiji Restorationist government, which introduced these policies, and they started to rally behind Saigo, who was a great hero of the restoration. He brought in the Restorationist government and overthrew the Bakufu, the Tokugawa military shogunate. He was seen as one of the three great nobles of the Restoration.
Mm-hmm.
He resigned from the government in the 1870s because he fell out with other Meiji leaders on a decision so essentially he wanted to invade Japan, but the government disagreed with him because they weren't, not invade Japan, invade Korea, sorry. They, other restorationist leaders disagreed with him at the time because it's not the right time for Japan to invade Korea, not ready yet, mm-hmm. So an incident in 1877, you know, the government was fully aware of the samurai discontent, and they attempted to remove weapons from Kyushu, which is in southern Japan,
mm-hmm.
Because Kyushu was rife with weaponry and such, and in an area with incredibly high amount of samurai discontent, which experienced, I believe, around about four rebellions before the Satsuma Rebellion. The government wanted to attempt to disarm the samurai because it was a powder keg of discontent. But this was discovered by the samurai Satsuma, and what resulted in was an ignition of tensions.
Mm.
And this, in combination with a supposed plot against Saigo Takamori by the Meiji Restoration government to assassinate Saigo, resulted in the whole thing blowing up and resulting in armed conflict. And that's just a sort of a brief overview of the events which contributed to the Satsuma Rebellion of 1877.
Mm. And so you have the historical context, and you know, you spoke about Gianluca's idea to gamify it. How do you start? What's the building block of the game? We understand the historical context now. How does the game come in? How do you start designing the game? What's your first step?
Interesting. Well, it's important not to attempt to reinvent the wheel, so to speak. So what I've done is I've implemented sort of new rules, for example, to try and emulate the warriors of the period. Also, you know, a lot of historical context is necessary. So mm-hmm. What I've done, for instance, the men who would be kings, it's got leadership traits. And what I've done there is I've rewritten the leadership traits to fit the period, you know, so it's a little nitbits of historical context thrown in there to truly represent sort of what the Japanese leaders were like during this time, so to speak. I've also written scenarios, for instance, inspired by primary sources for the game. So each of my scenarios are inspired by primary sources, first-hand accounts written, during the rebellion. There are plenty of new features within the expansion compared to the original Men Who Would Be Kings. So there's new leadership traits, new units. There are new scenarios, of course. And there's even, for instance, guides to the uniforms of the periods and such, because the opposing forces wore. Because this is a period of history which isn't really covered that much in detail mm-hmm. in the English language. So it's important to make people give plenty of context to the samurai, to the Satsuma rebellion, because it's an event in the English language which people aren't really aware of that much. Mm. So you don't want to chuck people in the deep end.
And to this extent, do you have like a list of resources at the back? Like, we spoke to some other game designers who prefer to include at least a list of resources. Do you have anything like that? Do you suggest that people go and read books or materials on the topic? Are there any? Like, how many are there in English? Because you mentioned that most of it, I'm assuming, is in Japanese. So how does that look like?
Oh, it's funny, because essentially this is basically the topic of my dissertation, or mm-hmm. an part of it, because up until recently, there have been very few widely available English sources on the Satsuma Rebellion. Currently, I remember one historian saying that today, you know, there was only one source which was widely available in the English language in the Satsuma Rebellion, and that was an account written by Sir Augustus Mounsley in 1879. But recently, you know, thanks to the powers of the internet, so to speak, I've managed to gain access to a tremendous amount of newspapers from the period in the English language. So in the diplomatic concessions, particularly in Yokoyama, I've managed to get around about 3-4 volumes of newspapers from that period. I've just been reading through them, and it's plenty of historical context there in English language on the Satsuma Rebellion. And I've also been reading first-hand accounts translated in the English language, which have been sort of lost a bit, you could say, of soldiers who fought during the rebellion. And, you know, it's a really fascinating account, you know, reading someone who actually experienced the conflict and some of the information he gives there and the experiences he details are very harrowing, and they're just fascinating documents.
Mm. And would you say, like, the game could even double as a historical, like, artifact or, I suppose, a resource, given the fact that it's not a widely covered event in English?
So I believe that, in one way, the project is innovative in the sense that this is a period of history which, you know, historical war gamers haven't really covered. So it is sort of, you know, a first in wargaming, so to speak, to have an in-depth supplement on the Satsuma Rebellion. Would I consider it sort of a source for the rebellion? I mean, of course, you know, it's important to have educational elements within the wargame, you know, to because a core aim of the project is to educate people. Mm-hmm. But I'm only a mere undergrad, so I wouldn't be referencing it for any mm-hmm. sort of dissertation work or any essays you're doing.
Yeah, but that's also why it's interesting, right? Because you're an undergrad. This is also interpretation. This is also new research. I want to ask you then, you know, about motivations, about your motivations for writing this war game. What are your goals with this? What do you aim to achieve? And we asked this of a bunch of game designers to come on the show, on the podcast. Do you want people to have fun playing your game? Do you want to educate? You mentioned that you want to educate them, but is that the sole purpose?
Well, the multiple sort of reasons, you know, why I was writing, you know, historical supplement. First, you know, I want it'd be awesome to educate people, make people more aware of this period of history. Secondly, it's, you know, awesome to combine my hobby and produce it in sort of a written format, you know, and mainly, you know, it would be great to be grateful people to just able to learn the history through war gaming and have fun. So, you know, having fun through war gaming and learning about history through war gaming, I think that's it's a great and very engaging way to learn. Compared to, I don't know, for instance, reading a history textbook. So, you know, having fun, you know, and educating oneself a little bit on the rebellion are my main motivations for producing.
Do Yeah, interesting. Yeah, it's similar to what others have said. So, like, I like the idea that there's almost a consensus, like there's almost a common goal that our creators share. I want to now ask you, you know, again, to speak about sharing resources and share goals. What are the advantages and or disadvantages of using, of basing your own project on an existing rule set, right? Like, we spoke about how this is built on top of the rules that Dan Mercy wrote for Men Who Would Be Kings. What are the advantages and the disadvantages for going that way rather than just from scratch, not necessarily reinventing the wheel, but making your own rule set or coming up with your own rule set?
Okay, so there are several advantages to coming up with my own sort of expansion. You know, I've got a lot of flexibility. The Men Who Would Be Kings rule set is a very basic but very straightforward rule set to learn. It's a very broad rule set as well. So I've got a tremendous amount of flexibility in adapting the rules. So what I really like about it is because The Men Who Would Be Kings is such a broad rule set and covers over a century's worth of colonial warfare, my project, the Last Samurai Rebellion, is essentially a source book for that period. And it's very specific. So it pairs quite nicely with a very broad rule set to focus on a specific event there or a specific war. So it gives, you know, for instance, a war gamer to, you know, a conflict to focus on, you know. And another benefit is that the Men Who Would Be Kings rule set. So I was actually watching a review of the Men Who Would Be Kings on Little Wars TV. And they were saying, you know, it would be great to have expansions for the Men Who Would Be Kings there. So in that regard, it's awesome to produce content which war gamers want, you know.
Answer the call, yeah.
Yeah, exactly, you know. And the Men Who Would Be Kings, you know, it is a really nice rule set there. And it's awesome just to have, you know, to be able to create something which is specific for this very broad rule set.
Yeah, interesting. And again, this is a good point to mention for anyone listening and or watching that every single thing that Eric mentions in terms of resources, as we've accustomed you to, is going to be in the description of the podcast wherever you're going to find it. So Extra Credits, 79 Account of Rebellion, or The Men Who Would Be Kings review, all of these resources should be available to you in the description. So we keep track of the things we mentioned because we also want you to be able to access these resources that we mentioned, at least if they're available on the internet for free. Eric, I want to ask you, what are the main strengths of The Last Samurai Rebellion as a game? Or, like, better yet, what does it do differently from Men Who Would Be Kings and or other games like it?
Okay, so with the last, I believe I covered this a little bit before, but so what makes the Last Samurai Rebellion different from the base version of Men Would Be Kings?
Or even just other games like it.
Oh, other games like it. Okay, so what it makes it unique is that I'm covering a period of history which hasn't really been covered in wargaming. So, you know, that's a very unique selling point, you know, that as far as I'm aware, that there hasn't been a published rule set on the Satsuma Rebellion. So it's great to be able to explore a period of history which has been relatively untouched by wargaming. And in that regard, it reminds me in many ways to writing a dissertation and how you're exploring a period of history or a topic which other historians haven't examined.
Has the rebellion been covered in any game whatsoever, tabletop, digital, anything whatsoever?
I mean, when it comes to, I mean, it's, I believe wargamers have covered, you know, the Satsuma Rebellion with, you know, scenarios they've created and stuff. The sort of homebrew sort of work, but I haven't encountered a published, you know, expanded or rule book to date based on the Satsuma Rebellion, and I'm fairly confident in saying this is the first example of that.
Yeah, fascinating. And then in terms of gameplay, beyond the setting, in terms of gameplay, how do you mix things up? Like, what makes it What makes The Last Samurai Rebellion different to play than Men Who Would Be Kings, than other games? I know you mentioned the rule sets and the scenarios, but what can you tell us about it, like the nitty gritty mechanics?
Okay, so with mechanics, I've introduced, you know, new rules and such to appropriately reflect units of the period. I've introduced some new weapons as well for units. So, for instance, during the Satsuma Rebellion, the Imperial government formed shock troops called Batoi, I believe, and they were police units. And these units were armed with revolvers. So it's great to implement, you know, for instance, revolvers within the men who would be kings, because those weapons haven't really been covered in the base rule set. So that's one example of how, you know, I'm building upon the Men Who Would Be Kings by paying justice to, you know, for instance, the police units during the Satsuma Rebellion who used these weapons. And of course, you know, there's special rules relating to revolvers and such and how one can use them. And it's also mechanics for, of course, the Satsuma rebels as well, you know, based on, for instance, their sort of heroic suicidal charges have implemented special rules, you know, for them as well.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah, that answers my question plenty. I now need to ask you the question that's like kind of at the heart of the lab, in a sense, kind of at the heart of the podcast. Should games be historically accurate? If so, like, are there aspects of your game or your game design that you've changed or left out entirely to accommodate just the historical context or like what you wanted to do? Like, where do you draw the line between this is fun and this is historically accurate? And have you like balanced it out, or is it more historically accurate than fun, if this is even a consideration that you had?
Okay, so that's a great question. So I do believe it's so of course it's important to have fun, especially when you're playing a war game. You know, you don't want to put too much history in there that someone becomes bored. But that's not to say that, you know, there isn't plenty of historical context within The Last Samurai Rebellion, because there is. You know, you're not forced to, it's not forced down your throat, you know, to read the historical context. Mm-hmm. It's very optional if you want to read it. But personally, I think it's a great way, you know, just to, you know, to read through it, become aware of what the Satsuma Rebellion is, and you know, it's important, you know, it's consequences and such. But the thing is, the Men Who Would Be Kings rule set, that's sort of a Hollywood style of, you know, historical wargaming, so to speak. So the actual gameplay and mechanics, I've attempted to emulate that in many regards, and it's not just, you know, a very super realistic, grindy simulator of warfare during the Satsuma Rebellion, but, you know, it's fairly, the rules are fairly simple, you know, it's fast-paced, like the base version of the Men Who Would Be Kings is. You know, there's plenty of historical context there if you want to read it and learn more about the rebellion. But, you know, that's optional.
Okay, so it can exist just as a game without context, like, and, you know, like someone who just says, hey, I just want to play a game, I don't really necessarily need a context. But for those who would say, hey, like, I would love to have it, it's there for them.
Well, of course, exactly. I mean, there is a lot of historical context within the, you know, for instance, explaining the scenarios, you know, what led up to the battles and such, and context to the causes of the rebellion, why it happened. You know, there's also historical context to, you know, for instance, the uniform guides, you know, what weapons, you know, the Imperial and Satsuma forces had and such. But, you know, it's not essential to know all this stuff to play and enjoy the game. It's an entirely optional to read through it. For instance, uniform guides are particularly useful for the, you know, the miniature hobbyist, you know.
Right.
It gives an idea of how to paint and, you know, miniatures and which ranges out there are the best to use, you know, which ones are the most appropriate to reflect, you know, Imperial and Satsuma forces during the period, you know, that sort of stuff.
Mm. And again, I have Eric's models on screen for you to enjoy looking at. As I ask you the following question about how, like, after the pandemic, or like after the onset of the pandemic, many players have started using tabletop simulators to play board games online. How did you find this transition from players gathering around the board to now playing board games on the computer? And I know that we've tested The Last Samurai Rebellion together online. How do you find that's gone for you, you know, designing this game when, you know, we were still more or less in lockdown? How has that changed the tabletop aspect of the game, if it has in any way?
Just as a quick shout out, some of the pictures there are photographed and taken by James at Ashura Model Terrain, who's been tremendously helpful and with the artistic and creative side of things and producing the project. But back to your original question based on the online sort of tabletop wargaming side of things. Personally, I really prefer conducting, you know, wargaming and playing wargames in person, you know, because it's a social hobby. And half the attraction of the hobby is, you know, looking at the miniatures, seeing how creative people can be with their painting, you know, having a few beers or whatever, and, you know, playing a war game and having some fun. Online, it sort of takes the human element out of it. Okay. But it is also undeniable that the online side of things has been tremendously helpful with playtesting, because it's very easy to create a scenario. You know, I don't have to make terrain, I don't have to build anything, I don't have to buy any miniatures to, you know, for the playtesting. And all the resources I need to conduct a playtesting are online. And I can organize a playtest for someone across the country. And it's just, you know, for in any time zone, really, across the world, you know.
Right.
And that cannot be replicated with tabletop, you know, wargaming, because, you know, it's in person. So it's tremendously convenient, you know, online tabletop, you know, wargaming on platforms such as Roll20. It's very convenient if someone's, you know, far away, or, you know, wants to do something quite quickly, then, you know, it's an incredibly useful tool to use. And plus, you know, don't have to clean anything up at the end, you know.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We've been using a lot of Roll20 over at the lab, and, you know, it's kind of like the landscape of the industry, more or less, moving towards hybrid. We spoke with the creator and designer of Distilled, Dave Beck, about his process with playtesting. And he was like, we loved playtesting online because it allowed, as you said, people from different countries to chip in and say, hey, I like this, I don't like this. So it allows you to, like, it makes it easier for you to reach people who you otherwise would not invite for playtesting. So that's been a boon for them.
100%.
Yeah. I want to then ask you about publication. Obviously, you're publishing the game with a lab, or assisted by a lab in any case. How have you found that process? What are the challenges you've encountered with publication? Obviously, this is your debut game. So, like, how... Just run us through that process of, like, you have it, you know, you've designed the game, it's 80% done, 90% done. How do you then move on to from the creation stage to the I'm putting this out in the world as a published work stage?
The Games Lab has been tremendously helpful in that regard. I wouldn't have been able to do this by myself, for sure. John Luca, he has, you know, contacts within sort of the wargaming industry. Dan Mersey, who wrote The Men Who Would Be Kings, he's very close to him. Dan Mersey is, I believe, I can't remember exactly, but he is currently in some sort of a research fellow at the university.
He's the game designer in residence, yeah.
Game designer, okay, there we go, excellent. So we've got very good connections with Dan Mersey, and Dan Mersey knows John Luca quite well, you know, and it's very simple for, you know, John Lucas to drop a message saying, you know, oh, Dan, you've got a student who's writing, you know, expansion to The Many Would Be Kings. You know, Could you have a look at it? Do you like it? Mm-hmm. And he's tremendously helpful with feedback and says, yeah, you know, this is great. You know, I think it can make a superb source book. And it's just having those connections there is really important in publishing something like this, especially, you know, considering that I'm a student, you know, I'm a recent student anyway.
And graduate, yeah.
Yeah, and without the support of the Games Lab, I wouldn't be able to publish this by myself. You know, and I've met people who are publishing or are creating, you know, historical war game from scratch, and they are finding it tremendously difficult because they don't have that support or network to help push their projects through, which are you know, beautiful.
I think this is also a good point for us to extend the invitation to any students, recent graduates, or even currently at the University of Edinburgh to reach out if you are interested in publishing a game or playtesting a game or writing, designing, anything that has to do with history and or games. If you're interested, please do reach out to either us directly. Dr. Gianluca Rocconi obviously is the administrator of the research lab, and also to Dan Mercy, who is the game designer in residence. And then, as Eric said, people just put you in contact with other people, and it's just fascinating to see how, yeah, things get done, things get published, and it's a brilliant thing for us as well. And I'm speaking from the lab side of things. We're also very excited to, you know, to be working with you, Eric, and to be publishing this, and yeah, to fortunately become, to hopefully become this resource for students and alumni and staff alike. So yeah, looking forward to more of this. Yeah.
Oh, you're making me blush. Stop.
Yeah. Eric, what advice do you have for people like us wanting to self-publish their own game? So not necessarily self-publish, but also just publish. Like, what advice would you have, like, especially younger people who, or like debutants in the space, who haven't? Go on.
Oh, especially for, you know, for instance, those who were interested in producing historical war gaming content, I'll definitely just drop the History and Games Lab a message, because it's a truly unique institution which is there to help students publish, you know, history related content. And it's doing this by yourself, it's tremendously hard. It's important to have, you know, support and, you know, sort of, and connections which can help you publish that content. Something which I found is really helpful with the Games Lab is, you know, the feedback, you know, how to improve. It's very much, you know, for instance, when you're doing a university and you do an essay, you know, so you take on board that feedback to help you improve and, you know, produce content. And, you know, having all those people there to support you and help you, be it with, you know, the actual content you're producing, or, you know, your writing style, or, you know, play testing. It's great to have that within the Games Lab, you know, and they're incredibly supportive.
Yeah, 100% agreed. You know, this is a different episode of the podcast because we also speak about internal affairs in this sense. We speak about the lab itself, so it's quite a unique one. But also, I want to extend the invitation to everyone, even outside necessarily the university or its reach, to do still message us, to do still email us, because we are willing and eager to help, you know, aid, assist, or even just invite on the podcast anyone who's writing a game or designing a game. So like the invitation to be part of like working with us, collaborating with us, is extended to everyone beyond the University of Edinburgh itself. So again, hopefully we'll have more student published work, and yeah, looking forward to seeing all of the games everyone's going to design, create, publish, and so on. Eric, now, you know, we spoke about publishing, but I want to ask you, as a game designer, what would you tell other students or graduates about the process of designing a war game, right? Like, how did you do it? How do you do it? And if I am a student that listens to this podcast and I want to say, hey, I could design a war game, how do I start? Like, what do I just take a sheet of paper and a pen and then just write down my ideas? How did you do it?
I find that a really interesting question. Well, I was fortunate in many regards by having a bit of a head start because, you know, I was doing my dissertation research and, you know, it was a topic I was very passionate about and very interested in. And, you know, so first and foremost, it's very important to find a period of history, or if you're producing a historical war game, for instance, that you are passionate about. What I liked as well is that my project seems to be fairly innovative in the sense that it's a period of history war gamers haven't really covered. You know, it's not essential necessarily to cover, you know, a period of history which war gamers haven't necessarily covered, but try and put your sort of unique twist on it. You know, perhaps cover a historical event which hasn't been covered in that much depth, or, you know, an individual. Or, you know, for instance, like John Lucas done with Lion Rampant, Viking in the Sun, which covers, you know, the exploits of Harald Hardrada. You know, it's especially for your first project, you know, thinking about doing, you know, writing, you know, expansion for a game for a first time and such, it's important not to reinvent the wheel and, you know, keep it simple. Keep it simple, fun, you know, entertaining. Don't overcomplicate things. And of course, you know, having a network of support, which the game, which the History and Games Lab offers, is tremendously helpful in producing, you know, a history game or, you know, or related content and such, you know. And a network of support is, you know, it's always very useful.
Yeah, regardless if it's just people who love war games or just, you know, groups of friends, family, and so on. I think, yeah.
Exactly. In all walks of life, it's important.
I want to ask you perhaps a complicated question. And I want to ask you, do you think it is financially viable for young people today to start designing games? And because for many, it is a hobby, but how do you turn that hobby into a viable career path or a viable source of income? Do you think young people should pursue this as a career or like as an avenue for making income?
Well, I certainly hope. I believe it's important to pursue your passions, really, because at the end of the day, you spend something like half your life working, something like that. So it's important to spend that time pursuing something you're passionate about. Something I really like about the Games Lab is it is an institution which is trying to get people more involved in this sort of, you know, especially with historical wargaming, it's trying to get young people involved in, you know, those sorts of careers, which currently it seems... I've tried applying for you know, various wargaming companies for jobs and such, but, you know, lots of these places are quite small family-run businesses, and unfortunately they don't have the resources to employ, you know, extra staff. But also, you know, you've got bigger companies such as Warlord Games and such, and, you know, I'm really hoping, what I think would be amazing is if the History and Games Lab can organize or be sort of be a leading institution which can get people involved within the sort of the historical wargaming sector and, you know, organize, for instance, internships or potentially even graduate schemes. But that's been quite optimistic.
Yeah.
Of course, you know, it's important to pursue something you enjoy, but it's also being realistic. You know, it's you are able to produce a wargames expansion and do another job at the same time. You know, John Luca does it, for instance. He's managed to produce two supplements, Crusader States and Viking in the Sun, sorry. And he's got a full-time job as a lecturer in the family, which is a job within itself, really, taking too care.
Yeah.
Yeah. So my advice would be to bank everything on producing, you know, a game supplement. You know, it's important to pursue something you enjoy. Also, you can certainly work on a war game supplement while doing another job.
Yeah,
there's a lot of flexibility.
Yeah, and, you know, like as you say about like graduate schemes, about the lab becoming this resource, I also have the hope that eventually this this becomes a way for us to help students, you know, turn hobbies into a viable career path. But this is us building the building blocks, setting the ground setting the foundation for something to come.
Yes, you're pioneers.
Pioneers, trying at least to be pioneers. Eric, when will this Last Samurai Rebellion be available, and what formats will it be available in?
Okay, so we're hoping for the project to be ready by around summertime, before summer, this year. Formats will be available online and paperback versions as well. So similar to, Crusader States and Viking in the Sun. Yeah.
So, and of course, we'll do all of the promotional material for it. If you're following us on Twitter, which I think you should, for announcements on everything that's happening, we will promote it on Twitter, on Instagram, on Facebook. We'll be everywhere on the social medias for the lab as well.
Oh, I love me some free advertising.
Yeah. I want to jump into the kind of final section of the podcast. We're about 50 minutes an hour, looking to wrap up around the hour mark. Eric, which games would you recommend to our audience? Which games have inspired you, or just the games that you enjoy playing in your spare time? So what would you recommend?
Again, Osprey games. I do like them. They're very simple, easy to read, quick to assemble force and play. So I remember I was down in Leeds and I was introduced to Lion Rampant for the first time for the Harald Hardrada expedition. Exhibition.
Expedition, yeah.
Yeah, apologies, it's been a long day.
No worries.
I'm running in around about 5%. But yes, so, Lion Rampant, that's a really interesting game. I like that. Historical war games, skirmishing games, they're quite big ones. Bolt Action looks really interesting. And of course, I've been devoting a lot of time to The Men Who Would Be Kings, because that is what my expansion is based on. So I really like sort of small scale historical skirmish games. I think they're really fun. Those are my favorites.
All right. Yeah. And again, as always, links available in the description. We'll make sure that exactly the games Eric mentioned. Again, to wrap up the talk about the game, what is the biggest challenge you face when designing The Last Samurai Rebellion? What is the one thing that you're like, "Ooh, I'm not sure if I'm going to make it"? And how did you overcome this challenge?
It's funny that it was actually because when I started The Last Samurai Rebellion, it was when I was writing my history dissertation. And of course, final year of uni, it's completely hectic, especially considering that I completed the final portion of my degree during the pandemic. Access to educational material severely restricted. Mm-hmm. And I was really concerned about balancing out the project and my university work, my degree, which I've devoted 4 years of my life to. I thought, well, it's not feasible to do both. But simple as dropping John Luke an email and being like, hey, I just need to focus on my uni work at the minute. And John Luke, he was very understanding and accommodating. He's like, of course, your uni work takes priority. And I got the uni work out of the way. I managed to graduate.
Congratulations, yeah.
Yes, so I'm very, very proud of that. And that was just a case of continuing on, cracking on with the project, really. So it's just that the most difficult thing was completing my degree and doing the project whilst, during the stages of lockdown and the whole COVID situation.
Yeah, bizarre times that we live in and design war games in. Eric, I want to ask you, beyond The Last Samurai Rebellion, it might be even too early to speak about this because obviously you have to wrap up this project, but what comes next for you? Like, do you have any other projects that you're thinking about? Do you have any other projects that like you're maybe like working on the side? What can we expect from you after The Last Samurai Rebellion?
Okay, so The Last Samurai Rebellion, that is what I'm devoting all my attention to at the minute. However, you know, there are various other historical periods which I believe do deserve attention. You know, so for instance, sort of the prelude conflict, so to speak, to the Satsuma Rebellion, or the most significant conflict in Japan before the Satsuma Rebellion was the Boshin War. Mm-hmm. Between the Bakufu and the Imperial Restorationist forces. Again, you know, similar to the Last Samurai Rebellion, I haven't encountered a significant wargaming publication which is devoted to exploring this period of history. So I think that would be really exciting to examine, and potentially in the future, you know, I might explore that myself, but time will tell, always does.
Oh, fantastic. Well, everyone will be keeping an eye on you and, you know, excited to see your work in the future. Now, let's transition into the final part of the podcast. And I have to mention that, yes, we have, if you've noticed, and some of you will, that we have been on hiatus for a few months, but we are back with more episodes of the podcast, as well as new seminars for you to enjoy. So do, you know, I do apologize for the slight break and podcast output as things were jumbled through as we were kind of getting ready for the semester to come, but now we're back in full force. And in terms of the events that are headed your way in the next few weeks, actually the next week, both of them, so we have an event by the History and Games Society, which is their monthly games night, and which will take place on Tuesday, February 22nd at 7 p.m. GMT, that's UK time. This will be a physical event and will take place in the balcony room in Old Moray House in campus, in Edinburgh University campus. I will be there, maybe Eric will be there, but certainly everyone else from the society and or the lab will be there to have fun. It's a very informal event where we kind of just play our favorite games. Last time we played Skull, we played Marrying Mr. Darcy, which, you know, we had the creators on for the podcast. So it's a very casual, relaxed, friendly atmosphere. And if you're listening to the podcast and can make it to Edinburgh, please, please do consider making it on Tuesday. If you're not in Edinburgh, we will have more online events available, more game nights available for you to enjoy. But we have noticed that people do really want a physical event for these games. And as Eric mentioned, there is a dimension to tabletop that gets lost online. So we're trying to kind of cater to both audiences and have online events and then also physical events as much as we can. As for the next event organized by the lab, this will be Sid Meier's Civilization, Breaking Genres for Better Histories, which is a talk by Robert Houghton from the University of Winchester. The talk will be on Zoom. This is an online event, and it will be on the 23rd of February at 5 p.m. GMT. Tickets are available on Eventbrite. The link is in the description, and I think we will have it recorded on and uploaded on the YouTube channel. So if you're watching this podcast on YouTube, this is the perfect place to see if the upload for the talk is also going to be available. If you're listening, then do consider checking out our YouTube channel for the recording of the talk. I am a big Civilization fan, one of my favorite games of all time. I'm very much looking forward to this talk. If you have any feedback or would like to get in touch for a potential podcast appearance, our DMs are open on Twitter at HNGLab. Or you can email us at hnglabpodcast@gmail.com. Again, this is hnglab on Twitter, hnglabpodcast@gmail.com for our emails. For more on the History and Games Lab, please access our Linktree link, where you will find all of our output plus our social media. Again, link is in the description. If you're watching the podcast on YouTube, it's also on screen right now. Eric, where can our listeners find more about you? We have your Twitter on the screen again for people watching, or in the description for people listening. But how can we get in touch with you, Eric?
Well, it's relatively simple. Of course, you can contact me through the History and Games Lab Facebook page. You know, you can drop the Games Lab a little message there. And then one of the fine folks there, such as like Ed, will get back to me. And, you know, I will answer your queries there. There's, of course, the Armchair Hobbyist on Instagram. That's that's a handle there where I post content on the, you know, the Last Samurai Rebellion. And, of course, yeah, the content is also published on the History and Games Lab Facebook page. And, of course, there's my Twitter handle as well, which I believe is on the screen and is being advertised there. So, you know, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, the big three.
All of them, yeah. Final word. Eric, what would you like to emphasize if there's one thing you want everyone listening and or watching to take away from this? What is that one thing?
Well, there's one thing really is, don't feel intimidated about, you know, writing a historical game or attempting to write an expansion or such. Especially when there's an institution like the History and Games Lab out there, which can help you, you know, produce that. So my advice is, you know, you just seize the day, you know, drop the Games Lab a message saying, you know, I've got a little project I want to work on, I've got some ideas. And, you know, you never know what it could lead to, because when I sent that first email to John Luca, I had, I had absolutely no expectation of me being in the position where I am now of publishing my own War Games expansion, you know, at my age. You know, it's just, you know, I thought it's something where I'd need a tremendous amount of, you know, connections and networking and such. But the Games Lab, it has all these resources there for you. And it's important not to try and attempt to do something like this by yourself. You know, it's awesome to have that network of support.
Yeah, that's great advice. Thank you. And yeah, thank you so much, Eric, for joining me. And we'll see you all next time, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye, thanks.
The Edinburgh University History and Games Lab podcast is a production of the Edinburgh University History and Games Lab. For more on us and future podcasts, connect with us on Twitter, Instagram, and or Facebook by searching for Edinburgh University History and Games Lab. We should be the first result. Music for today's episode is Call to Adventure by Kevin McLeod, used under filmmusic.io standard license. For more information on the link and the license, please check the show notes. Thank you for listening, and please join us next time.